be on Beyond the State of Capitalism, organising for a free society without bosses and politicians. Anarchists do not believe in blueprints, but hard do we envisage a future classless and stateless society. How will we organise public transport, distribute goods and services, and deal with crime in a post-revolutionary society? And what do we mean by workers' control of industry and services? These are just some of the questions that Gavin will be addressing in his talk and the subsequent discussion that will follow. And so without further ado, we have Kevin.
Okay, so like you said, you know, I don't want to place too strong a blueprint on what the future might hold, but we definitely want to have some kind of good vision of this type of society that we want to produce, otherwise we won't know which direction we should be going. So I guess the two main things that a future society can sort of be broken up into is the idea of governance and the idea of economics. And those two things really can't be completely separated, but they're interrelated. But those are sort of the two major spheres that I want to talk about. Okay, so as anarchists, we believe in having a directly democratic society. That means that, like, the entirety of the working class will basically get to make decisions about how our lives are conducted. Now, when we say we want a stateless and a classless society, what we mean is we don't want to have a cadre that controls politics. So basically, people will be making the decisions about their own lives directly. There will be no classes because we will not allow accumulation. So people will not be able to have control of coercive force in order to control the means of production or to accumulate goods. So currently we have a capitalist state. And basically the capitalist state means that there's a political group, an elite group, that controls coercion, coercive force, so that they can accumulate as much as they want. Okay, so In an anarchist society, instead, we'll get rid of that cadre who controls the policing and the military and the various political organs. Now, when we say directly democratic, we mean that decisions will be initiated by people themselves in assemblies. So people will basically come up with all of the governance regulations or ideas about how this society should be run from the ground up. So everything will originate with people in their workplaces and in their communities. Okay. Everything will be implemented from the ground up and will federalize. Okay, so it's not possible, for instance, for everyone in Ireland to all come into an assembly meeting at the same time. So in order to make things function, you have to have some delegated process. So the idea behind this is that in the assemblies that we have in our communities and workplaces, delegates will be given a mandate from their democratic organization to go and speak on behalf of that assembly in a sort of federated grouping. Now these delegates will be recallable. It's not electoral democracy. They will be given from the ground up the ideas about what to do. They're not acting in the stead of people. They're acting with a mandate from people in assemblies to do what the assemblies want. Okay? If they, in fact, don't implement things appropriately, they should be recallable. And any decision that is acted upon, that's not democratically decided, should be recallable. And this is a big difference between direct democracy and what we have right now, which is sort of bourgeois electoral democracy, where we elect somebody every 4 years or something, or every 6 years or whatever, and those people act in our stead. They originate all of the rules, all of the laws. They get to carry them out, and we don't really have any say in that, except we get to vote for one of them every 4 or 6 years. So that's not really democracy at all. Something quite different. Okay. One of the main principles behind, I mean, just that structure is not enough. And we also have to maintain a principle of liberty or subsidiarity. And the idea of subsidiarity is that decisions are always made at the smallest scale of competence. So, for instance, in terms of like what I want to hang up in my room, I'm the person who's most competent to decide that, and nobody else should be able to infringe upon my liberty to do that. So anything that only affects me, I should be able to decide about myself. Now when it comes to my neighborhood, if my neighborhood wants to do something that doesn't affect anybody outside the neighborhood, they're competent to enact that themselves. And so they're the smallest competent authority on that. Now some things like CO2, releasing CO2 into the atmosphere, that's something that actually has to happen on a global scale. There's no like individual that can be responsible for dumping out arbitrary amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere because it could cause global warming and everyone is affected. Okay? So it becomes a global problem at that scale, and so a global polity has to make the decision on that. A global governance has to make a decision on that. But that has to be dictated by people democratically. Okay, so with these sort of guidelines to how governance should take place, we also want to bring economics out of a capitalist economy and back into, sort of bring it back into the social and political sphere, so that when we're talking about production, we're actually talking about production for people and for people's needs and for what people want, rather than in the interest of accumulation and of profit making. So this notion is sometimes called libertarian communism. So with the current capitalist economic system, what we have is we have a state that tries to protect property rights. And property rights are basically the notion that you can accumulate arbitrary amounts of wealth. And the way that this suits the capitalists is that if you start with a lot of wealth, then you can control the means of production, you can exploit the labor force, and you can get more wealth. So you can basically enslave a lot of people by just controlling the means of production. And the way that they control the means of production is by utilizing a coercive force to protect these property rights, and also by using an ideological argument that property is a sound notion, that you should be able to own arbitrarily large amounts of things, regardless of, you know, who made it or how, you know, how it was gained. So what we want instead is we want to have a socially owned means of production. We want everyone to be able to control the means of production democratically. Okay, so we want production for desired use and not for profit. Currently, when you produce goods, when goods are produced in the economy, they're produced with the idea of maximizing profit. And that's very different from maximizing what people want. Okay, there's a lot of people who want food, for instance, and don't get it. Or want, you know, adequate health care and don't get it. The reasons they don't get these things is because it's not profitable. So the people who control the means of production will only produce things if they think they can exploit people maximally for them. So it's all bent on further accumulation of resources rather than on providing for people's needs. Okay, so in the current world we have financial institutions like banks and money markets and all of these different instruments that are used in finance. And basically what they are they're sort of two aspects to it. One of them is to figure out risk. So sort of a means of risk assessment. And the other one is to divert production towards investment in things. And these two things are related, but those are sort of the two things that it covers. Now, when we talk about risks in finance now, it's risks to profit is really what they're talking about. So you're talking about finance is trying to find out where it can divert capital to maximize profits. Now, in a libertarian society, what we want to do is we want to figure out how to invest in things that maximize production for desire, so that people get what they need and what they want, and how to divert resources that we have right now that we're not using immediately into producing things that people want. So that's So we want some idea of finance and risk assessment, but it's going to be risk assessment about like the risks in terms of pollution and the risks in terms of possible, you know, starvation or possibly people not getting what they want at the time they want. In a libertarian communist world, if things were run in sort of a reasonable way, people were getting reasonable education, people were getting reasonable health care, you should be able to expect that most of people's desires will actually be met. People don't actually have unlimited desire. You can't actually eat like, you know, 15 meals a day or really want to. Most people wouldn't want to. But there are limits to human desire. And we can fulfill most of them if things are run in sort of a rational way. So, now how could this be arranged? Well, there's a number of things that we need to do. We have, like, for big things like housing and you know, vacations and things like that, holidays, we would want people to have some sort of vague outline of what they want to do in the near future. So like, I'm going to need a 3-bedroom house or something like that, and so you'd have something called a demand schedule, which would basically lay out the big things that you expect as purchases or demands that you want to make on the economy. Then there would be people describing what labor they would like to perform in any of various different industries that they could provide labor. And then you try to balance, and then there'd also be sort of statistically expected demand. So we'd also try to figure out like what things people are likely to do. So you wouldn't want to have a demand schedule for how many beers you're going to have on Friday night, because you know, you might change your mind about it right while you're at the pub. So you have to have some sort of idea of like how many beers are actually going to be expected by people. So you take that and you take the amount of labor that people are willing to supply, and you sort of balance that and try to figure out, you know, how those two things balance. Now, there may be things that are there may be necessary labor that that's difficult for people to volunteer for. Now, if, for instance, cleaning sewers or something like that. So if we want to arrange such that undesirable jobs are done, they should be socially shared. So most really undesirable jobs are not highly skilled. Generally, they're low skilled. And most people will be competent to actually engage in them with a moderate level of training. So if they're socially shared, everybody's engaging in them, then it could be fair. Now, it's not just fair though. There's also, if undesirable jobs are socially shared, there's a huge incentive that doesn't exist in capitalism to get rid of them. Now, right now, we have the capacity to automate all kinds of things, and we have, you know, there's always new ways of arranging things such that perhaps these undesirable jobs aren't needed. But in capitalism, there's no reason to get rid of it if there's a huge supply of labor that's cheap. For instance, there's no reason to get rid to automate something that you can make people work for, you know, $3 a day in China to make. So getting rid of, so getting people, you know, people who are well educated to do work that's undesirable has a huge incentive to get rid of undesirable labor entirely. Okay, in terms of, there's also not just individual demand, there's also collective demands that polity has to decide on, like, for instance, public transportation, education, health service, and stuff like that. So people are going to have to sort of come together in democratic assemblies and decide how these things can be met. And in terms of people giving labor towards, like, so supposing you have a demand for public transportation, now it's best, the most reasonable way to deal with something like this is actually on the scale of something like a city. So public transportation in Dublin or in Belfast could be sorted by a sort of city assembly to meet those needs. And people could volunteer for labor in order to try to get a system that really functioned well. Now right now it's actually quite amazing, like just how bad the public transportation system is in Dublin, how there's, you know, there's Dublin Bus, and then there's the Lewis and the Dart and all these different things. I'm not sure how the situation here in Belfast, how it is, but you'd think that, like, if people had political control of their lives, they would be able to sort that out. But because there's all these sort of different organs and people don't really have any sort of means of controlling their own lives, they're unable to. So if we have democratic polity, we'll be able to sort out these collective demands much more easily, something that can't actually be done very, very effectively by a government controlled by a bunch of elites that really don't care about our needs very much. And certainly something that's not solved by capitalism very well, where the only need that they really want to meet is improving profits. So that the economic vision is basically trying to balance labor and demand, and the sort of political vision is trying to create a democratic society, a truly democratic society. And I think that basically wraps up a broad outline of future society.
Okay, thanks very much again. Anybody would like to make a point or ask a question in regard to that?
I was going to say, I know you haven't mentioned, for people in the room probably might be good to explain what historical examples could we use where maybe that did happen where the working class were in the saddle, like we basically controlled our own lives, we controlled our communities, our workplaces, we kicked out the bosses, the politicians. What historical examples could you use to...
Well, the revolution in Spain is probably, especially in Catalonia, is probably the best example in which this has taken place, where the CNT started running the trolley lines for all of the public transportation and made it free so that people could get on and get off it, and were running it basically on a volunteer basis. And it was much more efficient, faster, and safer because they didn't cut any corners because they weren't trying to make profits. So, I mean, that entire revolution was very democratically controlled, and you had a lot of this sort of idea of people controlling their own lives, and you know, real working class revolution where classes were actually sort of eliminated temporarily for the period that it existed. But I think that's sort of a good sort of example of what is possible if we can just realize it.
Okay.
I completely agree with that. I'm actually shocked because I've had a lot of those notions myself that the world should be like this. But what you're saying about undesirable jobs, just say cleaning out sewers, people wouldn't want to do that. But the world as it is now, things can be automated, so you could get a machine to go into the sewers cleaning out. Well, what do they need to do? In the future, in an anarchist state, would there be a monetary system? Would there be a currency?
Okay, so currency, currently, money, is something that you can accumulate. You can have arbitrary amounts of it, and then you can use it to corner the market. You can use it to buy up the means of production. You can use it to, for instance, if I wanted to buy up all the fields in Indonesia, and use them to make biofuels and cause everybody to starve, I could do so. So money is this, this substance that allows you to basically dictate how the economy functions and accumulate arbitrarily. So in that sense, no, there should never be any money in an anarchist society. In another sense, though, we do need to account for things. So we're going to have to keep track of things, and numbers will be involved. So something, that's there will be accounting systems, etc., right? And there will be sort of notions of finance and diverting resources and stuff like that. But I wouldn't say it's money that we would have in a society.
Well, maybe a monetary system. Completely agree with that. If everything can be automated, just say food production, you would have machines for just say wheat, cutting it, send it to a factory. Machines would run the factory. Humans wouldn't have to have any labor whatsoever in an ideal world, what you're saying. And I think that if everything is run out of human hands, then a state like an anarchist state will work, definitely.
Well, Yeah, and that's sort of an ideal world where all labor that we do is completely chosen. It's just for our own self-edification or interest. And that's definitely the ideal world that